This is Songs to Discuss
with your daughter,
with Willa Krishnaswamy
and Ravi Krishnaswamy, a dad and daughter team.
Produced by Copilot Music and Sound.
Welcome back,
listeners.
Wow, we really do actually have to welcome people back from our extended hiatus.
Dad, why don't you tell them what happened last week?
Well, 2 weeks ago, what happened? We were just too busy.
Yeah.
But then I lost my computer. Well, I didn't lose it. It went to Apple to get repaired. And, you know, I've got everything set up on my computer. Even if I can, you know, borrow a computer, it's just going to be a lot of work. So we just waited for my computer to get out of the shop. And now we're back.
Yes. What episode are we on, Dad?
This is episode 23 of Songs to Discuss with Your Daughter.
Yes, if anybody forgot. yeah, I hope our analytics won't be down so much because, you know, with stuff like this, YouTube, podcasts, whatever, consistency is key with the algorithms getting to people like strangers. But
you're too young to be worried about analytics. Just be yourself.
But if we want to grow the podcast.
Here's how we grow the podcast. You, listener, right now, think of one person you could tell.
No, actually, challenge. It's fall, beginning of fall challenge. 3 people.
Yeah. But you have to actually tell them with, like, your voice.
Don't text them. Don't text them a link. That never works.
Never works.
Never works. Best way is word of mouth.
Yep.
People can write as many blogs about us as they want, but no.
People have written 0 blogs about us.
I know. I'm just saying. Yeah, I know. We're not the biggest thing in the world, Dad. I know. I'm just saying like, people could write about us on the internet if that ever happened, which it probably will not. But they could, but the best way is word of mouth. So, I think I cut you off, but what you were saying, think of 3 people you can actually tell.
Yep.
About our podcast. And if you haven't already, leave us a review down there. 5 stars, please. A review, 5 stars. Subscribe. Tell people. Listen to it with your family. Catch up on the episodes you haven't listened to. All that jazz.
Time for the sponsor?
Yep. A word from our sponsors.
All right.
Okay.
So,
What episode? Sorry. I just messed up for a second. What song are we doing today, Dad?
We're doing an oldie.
Now, well, technically it's not old.
No. It's not old, but actually, what year did it come out?
2013.
So that would be closer to the day you were born than to today. So that's pretty old. That's more than halfway back through your lifetime.
Really?
Yeah, it's an oldie for you.
I'm 11. I'm not 12 yet, so you can't say that my halfway mark is 6 years old.
Well, wherever your halfway mark is would be, 5, 6 years ago. That'd be 2015 or so. You know? So, it's 2013. Anyway, it's Katy Perry and Juicy J, Dark Horse.
Dark Horse. Written by the people that write everything, Max Martin, or the person, really.
Wait, oh, so this is another Max Martin?
Well, it said on Wikipedia that it was co-produced and co-written by Max Martin.
That guy.
But that's just Wikipedia, so, I mean, that's still...
No,
Wikipedia.
I mean, Katy Perry is a big...
Yeah.
Big artist. I would kind of assume that everything on her Wikipedia has been checked by thousands and thousands of people that could possibly point out a fallacy. So
yeah, because she's Katy Perry, right?
Yeah.
So.
That
guy, Max.
Yeah. But you know what the funny thing is that he has such a range. Like every time I hear he wrote a song, I'm surprised. Like he wrote Toxic. He wrote a bunch of stuff for Ariana Grande, right?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote Since You've Been Gone by Kelly Clarkson, that big song.
Dad, he was the one who wrote the big hit for her, No Tears Left to Cry.
My gosh, it's like it's every different style.
Well, yeah. Well, at least he like works with the artists and other songwriters. Like, he's just part of the process. He might not write the whole thing off the top of his head, but he's at least involved in the process of the writing.
You know, his success just folds in on itself, because now he's at the point where everything he writes, simply by knowing that he wrote it, the person listening to it is going to assume that it's a catchy hit. And it becomes a catchy hit. It's like hypnosis. it's
hypnosis.
Yes. Nice. Because you don't just, like, there isn't just, like, music objectively there.
Yeah.
And, like, everybody hears the same thing. No, everybody hears something that's filtered through the situation that they're listening to it and what they know about the music that they're listening to and what they're expecting. So what I'm saying is, now, like, it doesn't... He could...
So wait. Sorry to cut you off. But are you saying that maybe you might think that somebody... Like, you might think a song is better and will be a radio hit, or, like, is better written or whatever. Like, so if, for example, someone might see on YouTube the music video has 500 million views, mm-hmm. as opposed to 1 million views.
Mm-hmm.
And 1 million is still pretty great, but, like...
Right. So what's the question?
That was the question. Are you saying that, like, you're, like, that just people, like, know... That it's going to be great, just knowing it's from Max Martin, just how, like, knowing,
yeah, I'm
like,
not,
a
I'm
song
not even,
is going to be great just because of maybe...
I'm not even talking the about the listeners yet at YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Because the listeners actually don't really know Max Martin that much. He could probably walk into most grocery stores and shop without getting assaulted or accosted, right? I mean, you've seen.
I would walk up to him and be like, "Can you write a song for me?"
But could you recognize him? I mean, do you remember what he even looks like? I mean, he's barely visible.
He looks Swedish.
Okay.
He's got brown hair.
Yeah. Okay.
He's like 40.
But he's not. He's very behind the scenes. What I'm talking about, I'm actually talking about the artists and the producers and the record label people.
Well, he is a producer.
Right, but I'm saying when he writes songs now. The people who are decision makers, like the artist manager who's picking songs for the artist, and the record label who's helping match.
Are you saying the artist has like no say here?
Well, the artist too. I'm including the artist. The artist and the management and the label, when they hear a Max Martin song, their brain is already telling them, this is written by Max Martin. It's going to be a hit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like if you met Picasso... In a bar, not that you'd be in a bar with Picasso, but and he pulled out a sketch pad and like, you know, did a couple sketches and ripped it out and gave it to you. You'd be like, I have a Picasso. Like, this is going to be worth something. It's brilliant.
Doesn't, I have a Picasso.
I mean, I'm not even sure what he does on that page is materially that important to whether it would have value.
But
so
it's
I'm saying
Picasso,
now,
so.
Yeah, but I'm saying like Max Martin is such a hit maker that I think that, and I think he's very good at what he does, but I also think that like materially speaking, like he can put stuff out and people will just assume because he wrote it, it must be good.
Yeah.
That's my point. Speaking of the song,
but I don't think there's any Max Martin song that isn't necessarily like not good. Like there are a few duds, I guess, but most of them are like awesome, I guess.
He's probably at the point where he doesn't write anything that isn't produced and recorded. Like all of his output is used. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know anything about him. Maybe he's got lots of like stuff in the closet that's never seen the light of day.
Maybe. If the artist gets, like, multi-platinum certified, then does he get multi-platinum certified or whatever?
That's a good question. Probably he does as the producer, not as the songwriter.
Oh.
Because platinum certification means you've sold a certain amount of recordings, and the recordings
are... Let's say he wrote a song for Taylor Swift, and he was a songwriter, not the producer.
Not the producer?
Yeah, then would he?
Then I don't think he would get a plaque for his studio, because I think you can record anybody's songs. The awards for the recordings go to the people who created the recording, which would be the artists, the musicians, the engineers, and the producers.
True.
So,
before we actually share an excerpt, would you like to share a fun and weird musical fact that you learned 2 weeks ago related to interpolation and royalties?
I'm not sure.
And The Sound of Music?
Oh.
Okay, so we have a fun musical fact moment. I'm sorry, before we even get to the actual episode with the actual song and we actually play the excerpt of the actual Dark Horse song by Katy Perry, maybe you've completely forgotten what the episode's supposed to be about, but we have a little fun fact that is kind of surprising.
Kind of surprising.
Yeah, take it away, Dad.
This blew my mind. Ariana Grande, who has the song... 7 Rings, that song uses the melody or interpolates the melody from My Favorite Things from The Sound of Music.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you would expect she would list the song as being co-written by the songwriters of
My Favorite Things, which are Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Right. But, so you think what, 50-50?
Yeah, maybe, because they only really wrote the verses, and she technically changed the lyrics, her and herself and her team, whatever.
Yeah. It's 90-10. They get 90% of the songwriting royalties, and so, Ariana Grande gets 10%.
Yeah, Ariana Grande. So, like, Rodgers and Hammerstein, they're both dead. Oscar Rodgers? What are they? Oscar Hammerstein? What? I don't know. But they wrote My Favorite Things, and their label, what is it, their label or their... Or their media production company? Something.
Their publisher. Stop.
Uh-huh.
You have to. This is like the fundamentals of the music business, that if you ever want to get into music, you have to understand.
Dad, I just want to point out.
Wait.
Okay, never mind.
Publisher.
Uh-huh.
Publishes the songs.
Uh-huh.
Which is the composition.
I thought that's the label.
No. Publishes the songs, which means the intellectual property, meaning the melodies, the lyrics, however you write them down on a piece of paper. Think of it as being written down. You could hand it to somebody else and they could perform the song in whatever style they want, right?
Mm-hmm.
The label, record label, produces and sells recordings by recording artists. Those recordings are of published songs
by the publisher. Okay, that makes sense.
But there's like two sides to the business, and it runs through everything you do in the music business. Publishing, which is the underlying song, and recording, master recording, they call it. The you know why they call it the master recording?
Why?
Like, why it's the master? Because you would go into the studio.
I know. You're going to master it. Like the volume levels.
No. Mastering's related to that. But after you get done and you master it, you create a master, which is the finished copy of the recording. And before digital, it was one tape. And that was the thing. And then you took that to a manufacturer and you duplicated it. And that's how you sold copies. But the master recording rights is the right to make those copies because you own the first copy.
Ah. Okay, so we were talking about Rodgers and Hammerstein and their publisher. And so 90% of 7 Rings royalties, so like 10% go to Ariana Grande, her team, her songwriters, her producer, whatever. But then 90% go to the publishing Inc., the estate of Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Well, the owners of the publishing, which would be... Now, it gets even more confusing because publishing then gets split into two halves.
But wait, then how does the label make money?
The label?
Yeah.
For My Favorite Things?
Yeah.
They're making diddly squat on Ariana Grande.
What do you mean?
Nothing. Zero.
Oh.
Zilch.
Because they're not selling my favorite things. It's no. Just that the publishing has the...
The publisher of the song is making all that money. And so when you register a song with what's called a PRO, which stands for Publishing Rights Organization, which is an organization that has been instituted to keep track of who's using songs and make sure that the people who wrote the songs get paid. I know this is very confusing. The PRO, when you register a song with the PRO, which would either be ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, or GMR, which are the four PROs in the United States, and there are different ones in other countries, you're totally falling asleep now. But maybe somebody's listening that wants to learn this stuff. When you register the song, you can think about there being 200% of value to your song. You know why it's 200% and not 100%?
Why?
Because there's a matching amount of royalties that are given to the songwriters themselves and to the owner of the publishing rights or the publishing company. So 100% to the publisher, 100% to the songwriter. And then if there's five songwriters, then you have to split that 100% up into 20%, you know, times five or whatever. You can do fractions.
Your hands talk.
Yeah. So there's a lot of fractions in songwriting royalties.
I don't
royalties
want to do math.
And percentages.
Weekend. Yeah, I'm not doing that.
So anyway, that's a crazy statistic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. But Ariana Grande is rich enough, so.
Yeah, she doesn't.
She doesn't.
This is a preview. This foreshadows a theme, mm-hmm. which is that there are things happening in the music industry that are really like setting bad precedents for smaller artists. So like Ariana Grande can give away 90% of her song because she makes boatloads of money on all of her other songs.
Yeah.
But then it sets a precedent for Highbird.
Yeah. Or, who's
or,
that? My dad.
Or me, you know.
He
or
released an album.
Someone else who's, it sets this precedent to have it be so lopsided. It's very...
Funny, do you still have that contract with Atlas Records or whatever?
Yes. It's not a contract, though.
Have they made any money from you?
No. No one's made money from me. Not even me.
Not even...
No.
So what you were saying.
So anyway... We've gotten quite a way into the podcast without actually actually playing some of the song.
Okay.
But I'm saying that foreshadows what we're going to talk about with this song, because this song was actually involved in a legal situation.
Which we will talk about, and that is going to be the main thing we talk about this episode.
Yeah.
So, whew, why did I even tell you to mention a fun fact? It was just like fun fact time, and then big music lecture on songwriters, publishers, labels, blah, 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 blah.
Okay, so who manages the underlying song? It's quiz time.
The publisher.
Who manages the recording of the song?
The label.
Yes. There you go.
Follow along the quiz at home, people.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so Dark Horse is what we're talking about. Just in case you forgot, you probably did. We're still not good at this podcast thing, but... and by Katy Perry and Juicy J, so I'm guessing we should play an excerpt. Yes. All right. Let's hear it, Dad.
Whoop. Preview.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Okay, here's Dark Horse by Katy Perry. 2013 yeah. Smash hit.
Y'all know what it is. Katy Perry. Juicy J. Let's rave.
And here you were. You were gonna come to me.
And here you are.
You better choose carefully.
Cause I'm
capable of anything. Of anything. And everything.
Make me your Aphrodite. Make me your one and only. Don't make me your enemy. Your enemy. Your enemy.
So you wanna play with magic? Boy, you should know you're falling for. Baby, do you dare to do this? Cause I'm coming at you like a dark horse.
There's no going back.
Hey.
Hey. I'm going to fade it down, and then maybe we'll go to... Should we go to the rap and listen to that? From GCJ?
Yeah.
Because we don't want to play the whole song.
Yeah. Or else we'll get just all this... All these notices about how this is not our song.
Yeah, I wonder, who do you think would send us the notices? The publisher or the label?
The publisher.
I think the label.
Okay.
Because we're playing the actual recording.
But, like, are we even that popular for us to really be a threat to the label? Like, or whatever.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I distinctly remember hearing this on the radio, listening to this on the radio with you.
Was this on the radio?
I think so, yeah.
I know it was a hit, but was it, like, actually on the radio?
I think so, yeah. And I remember going, there's no going back.
And I would just, like, crack up.
Yeah. All right, here's Juicy J's part, which I think is what drew me to the song, ultimately.
There's no going back. She's a beast. I call her karma. She eats your heart out like Jeffrey Dahmer. Be careful. Try not to lead her on. Shawty heart is on steroids, cause her love is so strong.
We're bouncing
you
here.
Fall in love when you meet her. If you get the chance, you better keep her. She's sweet as pie, but if you break her heart, she turn cold as a freezer. That fairy tale ending with a knight in shiny armor. She can be my sleeping beauty. I'm gonna put her in a coma. Damn, I think I love her. Shot it so bad, I sprung and I don't care. She wrapped me like a roller coaster, turned the bedroom into a fair. Her love is like a drug. I was trying to hit it and quit it, but little mama so dope, I messed around and got addicted.
Pretty dramatic.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we encourage you to go ahead, listen to the whole song there. The whole song, because it's a great song. But listen to the full thing. You can't get the full experience here, unfortunately. You got to add this to our, like, mega podcast.
Yeah, it's on the list.
Mega playlist. Yeah, we have that. Everyone's been requesting that, and they're like, this song isn't on here, but we're doing our best.
So this song has a pretty crazy video. You remember the video?
Yes, I watched it, like, a jillion times today on the MacBook Air that you have.
And so what happens in the video?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if we should spoil it, because they can go ahead and watch it. I mean, I know a lot of people listen
to
podcasts.
It's not spoiled. It came out in 2013. Tell the audience what happens.
Okay, but I know that a lot of people who listen to our podcast aren't, like, big pop people, but they just listen because they're, like, my dad's friends, and my dad's like, hey, listen to this podcast, and so they listen because I'm my dad's daughter, and they want to support us or whatever, and they're, like, people who listen to, like, indie rock or whatever, and they haven't heard of any of these songs, so, and you might be, like, mowing the lawn while listening to this, or driving, or doing the dishes, I don't know what you're doing, but if you can... And you haven't seen the video for this, then go watch it. But I'll tell you guys.
It's crazy.
Just anyway. It's like, well, the title, they have this really weird font in the beginning. It says, like, Egypt a crazy long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, she's like Cleopatra or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
She's like some Egyptian, like, empress.
Mm-hmm.
High person. And then there's like, she eats this, like, chili thing, remember? And she, like, has to sit this, like, big glass.
Is it a chili?
Yes. Yeah. And then she puts this, like, weird thing in her mouth. Like, it's like a diamond, like, whatever you call it. It's like hardware.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Just watch it, because you probably aren't a pop person. You're probably not listening to this for, like, pure, like, because you're really interested in the song. You're probably just interested in, like...
I thought it was really creative.
Yeah, but the video is creative. So if you haven't seen the video, go listen.
And because whoever directed it must have, like, they got, you know, a minute into the song, and she has that line, make me your Aphrodite. So she has all this imagery of, like, a goddess already, or like a warrior princess. Mm-hmm. And then in Juicy J's section, he says... She can be my sleeping beauty. I'm going to put her in a coma. So that there's more, like, mythology and fantasy in the lyrics. So I think I think they tap into the fantasy in the lyrics. What is this song about?
It's about this, like, it's kind of about witchery and, like, I guess, because remember how in the lawsuit, we'll get to that later, Adam Neely was like, the song evokes, like, witchery and imagery and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, don't me. Like, say something.
Well, I mean, I think the song is actually using that imagery metaphorically. It's not really...
No, I know it's not about that, but I'm saying it's like trying to make you think of that.
Right, but she's saying...
That. She's saying she's like, this great person, you can be with me, but if you want to like play with me, then I'll like become this like weird...
Yeah, she's saying like, don't mess with me. I'm like amazing, but a little like unpredictable and powerful. And I'm going to put you in a spell. So you better be prepared for what you're getting into when you have a relationship with me. Right?
Yeah.
Is that what she's kind of saying?
Yeah, but why does that matter, Dad?
I think it's good to just kind of set up, you know, what the song is about before we dig into other stuff.
But, like, all the songs we talk about have these, like, cheesy meanings. And they're all, in the end, about, like, the same thing.
Yeah.
But, we should probably get in.
Yeah.
But actually, we said we'd do this a few episodes ago. Give a little intro about the artist. Dad, who was Katy Perry?
Catherine Hudson.
Catherine Elizabeth Hudson, I think.
Okay. Grew up fairly poor, as we've read. Grew up singing in gospel churches.
Yeah.
And... put out her first album is like a Christian rock album. You can find it on YouTube. It's pretty interesting to listen to. And, you know, then kind of reinvented herself as a...
Pop star.
That big song, I Kissed a Girl.
I kissed a girl.
Fun song. Yeah. And she... been massive, had a massive career.
Although now
she's kind of a little bit in the background now, hasn't...
Now she is, yeah. She's kind of... I wouldn't say under the radar, because somebody told me that was inaccurate when I said that the other day. But
yeah, she's not under the radar.
She's just kind of... well, she's not releasing any music, so...
Yeah.
And, well, actually, she did have an album in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
But she's an American Idol judge.
Yeah.
And she has a daughter, apparently.
She does.
Daisy Dove Bloom.
Really? How old is the daughter now?
I don't know, like an infant. Lola sent me a photo of her.
Oh, really?
Yes. We won't get into that. But then also, the rapper in this song, Juicy J, I have no clue who that is. I'm guessing he's just like a rapper. I don't know.
I mean, he's big enough to have a duet with Katy Perry. Let's see. Jordan Michael Houston III from Memphis, Tennessee. He was born in 1975. We're the same exact age.
Ah.
Wow. How come I didn't have a duet with Katy Perry? was part of 3-6 Mafia and has had like a long solo career and... yeah.
Okay. We haven't even gotten into the questions yet.
Well, fire away.
Actually, not yet, because we have to give credit to the guy who we got most of our research done from, Adam Neely. Okay.
Hey, speak for yourself. I think his video is good, but I have some criticisms of his video, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yes, Adam Neely has a great... explainer on the big lawsuit, which was recently, very recently, like earlier this year, overturned.
I think it was 2020.
When it was overturned?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe. Let's see. I've got the tab up here somewhere.
Just find some information on the internet.
Oh, yeah, you're right. March 2020. Yeah. See, everything that happened during the pandemic just could be yesterday, could be a year ago.
Uh-huh.
So it was overturned, although the person suing her, whose name is Flame, I mean, that's his stage name. I don't, oh, look at little baby Flame. He's a Christian rapper. The person suing her is vowing to appeal the overturned lawsuit. Because the lawsuit...
Wait. Could this just keep going on? Like, this guy sues her, she has to pay a fine, then she gets an appeal over Flame, and the Flames goes over Katie, and then somehow this gets to the Supreme Court, and then...
So this is when, you know, it would be good to get Mom onto the show to talk more about civil procedure, because I'm not the lawyer in the family, but... She was sued by Flame. She and Juicy J were sued by Flame because he said that they ripped off his song. Okay? I guess Max Martin must have been sued, too, because he was one of the composers. A jury found them guilty of infringing on Flame, and then a judge overturned the verdict of the jury, but said that they could, you know, they could... appeal that if they wanted to, and they are appealing that.
Oh.
So, but they can keep going up until the Supreme Court. It would be pretty funny if it went to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, that'd be great.
They have better things to do than adjudicate synthesizer melodies.
Wait, yeah, if RBG were on the Supreme Court with this case, what do you think she'd do?
I think the Supreme Court would send it back down. I don't think they would look at it. But
just because it's,
I don't know,
not like it's pop culture. It's not,
it's a ridiculous case.
Yeah.
So should we talk about the case?
Yes. So my first question is, what is the whole thing with the lawsuit? What's your view on it? Do you think it's infringing on copyright and Katie and her team should be sued, or do you think otherwise?
Well, let's give the audience a little explainer here. Here is Flame's song.
You know what it is? I love it. Yeah. I love it. Let's talk about it. Your boy's been a Christian quite a few years. Yeah. Victory in faith, but I failed in my fears. Man. I heard a lot of words that...
Okay, so... What do you think? What do you think he's suing about? You've got ears.
Well, maybe we should also play the Dark Horse.
Okay, now let's play the Dark Horse.
By Katy Perry.
Yeah, y'all know what it is. Katy Perry. Juicy J. Let's rage.
I knew you were. You were gonna come to me. Here you are.
So what is he suing about?
He's suing about the synth riff that is
So it's going... Something like that, right?
But that's not the Dark Horse one. The Dark Horse one is...
And then the Dark Horse one has a...
Oh, you're talking about the Flame.
Little bit of a different timbre, and it's a little bit of a different key, but I'll put it in the same key for comparison.
Yeah.
Okay.
You could have found a better timbre for that. But,
yeah, I know. But I was looking. It's supposedly... Interestingly, Juicy, you know, if you read about the timbre of the synthesizer that he's suing them about, that synthesizer timbre actually goes back to a band called The Art of Noise and a machine called the Fairlight, or they think it's either the Fairlight or the DX7. So it's not even like Flame or Katy Perry were the first to use these kinds of sounds. These sounds have been in circulation since the early 80s. So what does Neely think?
Neely thinks that, you know, their notes, it's a, I don't know, can I really explain this right? It's a sound, he's saying. I don't know. Can you explain it maybe?
Talk about that funny example with him playing piano.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. I should have prepared better. I'm on a podcast. I wrote an outline, but I guess I didn't think about this. I didn't think I'd have to explain what Adam Neely said. He said that you can't really like own notes. There's only a certain amount of times you can put notes together. Yes, he said the timbre is, yes, a little similar, but the Katy Perry one is a little more airy and breathy, almost trying to emulate the voice.
Mm-hmm.
And Flames is a little more, is the sawtooth, which we actually talked about
so airy,
episodes and episodes ago.
And
the sawtooth here. Yeah, and so he's saying that like the notes are similar, but at the beginning he played so many other examples of stuff before Katy Perry and before Flame that were like that. Maybe like, why don't you guys like, if you get a chance and you're actually really interested about this, you probably aren't, and you'd probably just listen to the episode for, I don't know why, because you just feel like it.
Just pause it
and
Google Adam Neely really, Dark Horse, and then come back in 10
on
minutes.
On YouTube, and then come back in 10 minutes, because he has this part where all these songs, like, there was a... He was like, okay, so this is Flame, and then he was like, okay, and now this is Dark Horse, and he was like, oh, wait, no, sorry, this is Dark Horse, and then he was like, no, wait, that's another song, and he was basically saying that, like, this form of notes, these notes in this timbre, wasn't invented by Flame or created in 2008, and it wasn't like it's so original to Flame or anything. So he's saying, and he did a little like explainer skit where it was like, if you're suing for the timbre, well, anyone could like copyright the sound of piano, and I could be playing a piece on piano, and this guy, this judge, whatever, could come in and say, oh, wait, Willa, you're playing piano, that's copyright. And I'm like, oh, thank you, judge, I guess let me play this song in a different sound, even though I'm not playing a copyrighted song, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, I didn't really explain that very well.
Okay, so Neely says, look, you can't copyright a timbre. Imagine if someone tried to own the sound of the piano. That's ridiculous. And then he gives a lot of examples that are similar ostinato phrases, you know, these like rhythmic pattern phrases
and
descending from the minor third down to the one. And
yeah. And might I add that he added that this part, this ostinato is in the verse of Katy Perry's. It's a supporting riff. It's not like in the chorus or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the background.
And it's very effective the way he plays all those other melodies through the same synthesizer sound. So you can kind of hear how close they all really sound.
Which were other melodies from like other songs, whatever, that might have been before Flame, but they were also, they had like the same kind of note things, but not like the exact same melody.
Yeah. So to answer your question, I completely agree with Neely that, and I agree with Neely and the judge that just overturned this, that this judgment was really incorrect, that there was not enough, you know, of a connection. There's too many similar examples like it. And, you know, Neely really goes after the musicologist, the forensic musicologist in the case, a guy named Todd Decker at the University of Washington in St. Louis. Here's where I will criticize Neely, though. I think he actually kind of doesn't quite fully demonstrate how similar the two songs are in other aspects beyond the synth melody. I agree that the lawsuit is wrong. You know why?
Why?
Because it makes it very restrictive for people who create music to create music without being sued if you have such a low bar for saying that this is similar to that, right?
Yeah, there's only so many times that these notes, like, it'd be really cool. I bet this has been done. Somebody's gotten, like, a supercomputer and, like, put in all the notes and, like, calculated how many times notes can be differently arranged, different rhythms, different whatever, how many exact different melodies
there would be. Yeah, there's a famous phrase in, you know, in the music industry, there's only, you know, 12 notes and 12 tones in a scale, you know. Although that's not true. If you go out of the West and into places like India, there's many more tones. But anyway, that's a total digression. but but Neely kind of he kind of skips over some, I think, some important things, and I don't come at this lawsuit as a complete newbie. I'm not saying I've been involved in lawsuits, but what I have been involved in is I've been involved in a 20-year career of having advertising clients call me up and say, hey, we like this song, we can't afford it, can you come up with something very similar? And oh my God, the look on your face that you just gave me. And I've had to navigate this issue for years as a composer. And what I will say is, the intro of Katy Perry, if I had been sent the Flame song by an advertising client and they said, please give us something similar to this, I would not feel comfortable sending the intro to the Katy Perry song, because it actually is, even though those notes are very common. The other thing is...
Wait, you wouldn't be comfortable doing what?
I wouldn't send that. I would be worried about a lawsuit.
You wouldn't send Katy Perry or Flame?
Katy Perry. Because Flame came first. You have to look at this as Flame coming first and then Katy Perry. That's how the lawsuit is structured. So I'm saying, if an advertiser said, please rip off Flame, I produced the Katy Perry track, I would actually listen to it, listen to Flame, and say, you know what? I can't send this to the client because it might get everybody in trouble with a lawsuit. I hear enough of a similarity, because it's not just the melody. It's the tuned 808 drum sound, which is another common timbre.
Hey, you said you can't copyright timbre.
I know. I said I can't copyright timbre, but... And then also, both of the songs start out with a spoken, like, rap boast. So you have basically, like, three elements... The tuned 808, the synth melody, and the vocal boasting at the beginning of both of those tracks. And
so wait, hold on. Are you saying that you think Katy Perry should have paid, like, $1 million or something for a lawsuit that she lost?
It's complicated. I don't think she should have to pay.
But you think that Flame should get, like, some royalties or something?
No. No, I don't. But I think it was close enough to be worried about a lawsuit, and I don't think it was crazy to consider a lawsuit. What I'm criticizing now is not the jury and the judge, which we've already criticized the jury. I'm criticizing Neely, because I think that Neely doesn't mention the drums or the vocal boasting. So I want to just play those intros again. So here's Katy Perry.
Oh no!
Yeah, y'all know what it is.
Is this boasting?
Juicy J.
Or announcing?
Let's rage.
And then you hear that? Boom, 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 boom. You hear that sound?
Yeah.
Let's play the rhythm on that. Whoa. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's called an 808 drum that's tuned. So it's basically set up like on a keyboard where you can play different pitches, even though it's a drum sound. Because, you know, drums actually have pitches. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, well, they do. They vibrate at certain pitches, but most drums give you a lot more transients and noise than pitch, so you don't think of them as pitched instruments. But the 808 is an electronic drum sound where the resonant part, the pitch carrying part, is jacked up in the device to so you can use it almost like a bass line, and it's very popular in trap, which you know what trap beats are.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, so now
if someone's like, I'm infringing on copyright for trap, then like every song on the radio would be.
Well, no. I'm not saying you can own a timbre. So here's the Joyful Noise by Flame.
You know what it is? I love it.
So he goes, you know what it is? I love it.
Yeah.
And what does Juicy J say?
He says, y'all know what it is.
Wait, let me go. Sorry. Yeah, you hear that?
Yeah.
You know what it is? Y'all know what it is?
Yeah.
Both at the beginning of the song, and then you hear the...
Yeah, the... Do, 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 do.
So it's a different pattern. But it's a syncopated... tuned 808 sound. He... You know, he might have heard this on the radio and been like, wait a minute. I thought that was my song for a second. I don't think it's enough to win the lawsuit, but I think it's enough to bring the lawsuit.
Ah.
Because what I'm saying is that even though you can't own the timbre of his voice, and you can't own the timbre of the pitched drum sound, and you can't own the timbre of the synthesizer, when you start to arrange those sounds specifically in that arrangement, in that order, in that at that tempo, with the same feel, it does start to get pretty similar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And also, here's my other criticism.
Of Neely.
The piano bit was really entertaining, but it's actually a poor metaphor. It's sort of a straw man argument, because everybody knows that a piano is a big acoustic instrument, and wherever you get a piano, they all kind of sound the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
Synthesizers, on the other hand, are devices that you can creatively program and intentionally create different timbres that are your own timbres. So the fact that they were using a very similar synthesizer sound, I don't think you can compare it to a piano. I think it's more of a creative decision what sound on a synthesizer. You could make infinite timbres on a synthesizer. You can only have one basic timbre on a piano.
Yeah, definitely.
So, kind of a junky metaphor, Adam. Sorry.
But it was entertaining.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and it's kind of a chicken and an egg thing, because part of the reason why I wouldn't send the Katy Perry version if I was in that position is because we live in a world where these Katy Perry decisions exist.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
All right. Well, we'd love to hear from you listeners what your thoughts are on the lawsuit. Would you have sued if you were Flame?
So what I do when I get a reference from a client, you know, I try to understand what they're... I try to understand what they're hearing in it and how it's functioning, and then I try to do that in a different way. And if they really push me, if I know that there are, like, you know, four or five different elements of the song, like the tempo, the meter, the key signature, the melodic shape, the timbre, the combination of instruments, the gender of the vocalist and timbre of their voice, if I know there are all these different factors...
Yeah, it's like...
I know. I'm going to make... Sorry. Like, burping up my lunch or something while I'm talking. If I know there's all these timbres, I will make sure not to have all these factors all sort of the same, you know? Maybe I'll use the same tempo, but a different...
Key.
Maybe I'll use, you know, like... If they wanted, y'all know what it is, I'll get somebody who has a completely different voice to say that, you know?
Yeah.
I won't have somebody with a very similar voice.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Is it just me, or is it like, this isn't trying to be, I swear, I am, like, not racist or anything. I'm not trying to be racist at all. At all. But is it just me, or do a lot of rappers that I hear just, like, off the top until I hear, like, the title of who it is, I just, like... think it like might be like this one rapper that I know of or something. Like, they sound very similar to ear, just like the way they like rap. Like, I would be able to think that Juicy J might be DaBaby if I hear it from far enough or something.
Well, okay, so,
and again, I'm not trying to be racist at all. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying,
like, I think you have to be careful about how you talk about that.
Oh my god, am I a terrible person?
No, you're not a terrible person. For one thing, I think the timbre of Juicy J and Flame is very similar.
Yeah, like...
Okay. But another thing is, I think, like anything else, like, you can... Like, you told me the other day in the car that you could tell that Ariana Grande's voice had matured on Positions compared to her first couple albums, right?
Yeah.
Because you listen to her voice a lot. I think if you listen to a lot of male rappers, you will start to identify all of the different ways that they do things differently. From not only from the register and timbre of their voice, but their, you know, regional accents to the kinds of rhythmic flows that they choose. And you will see that there's a huge diversity. And if you really become an expert in that field, you'll think that they sound completely different. So I think it's like anything else. Like, the more you spend with it, the more refined of an ear you would develop. Yeah.
I was just thinking that, like, the raps that I've heard, like especially in the beginning of Levitating, DaBaby, before Dua Lipa comes in and he's like, what is it? Everyone want to get on the dance floor.
Well, you know,
on the dance floor. And, like, they always have these intros that sound very alike, like, with the timbre, and, like, they're like, kind of, like, boasting. They're like, yeah, we're in the song, like, get on the dance floor, everybody. You know what I mean? Like, just the timbre, like, at the beginning, like, the Flame and, like, Juicy J, they sound, like, almost, like...
Yeah, those three examples are similar, and actually, I think it's interesting they seem to all do this thing where they kind of announce themselves at the very beginning so that you know it's the version where they have a verse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know what that, like, I don't know. I just had a random comment.
You want to move on and you have other questions?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't listen to rap that much, but the rap that I've heard, they always have an intro. They're like, yeah, give it up, or like...
Well, imagine, you know, like, you're performing and you're handed the mic. You introduce yourself to the crowd. It's the same feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like in, like, rock music, a lot of times, like, since the late 90s, you know, if a big electric guitar part's going to come in, you'll often hear, like, a squeal of feedback first, almost like the person's turning their amp on. It like, sort of announces the entrance of something.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just taking that in, sinking it in. Okay, so this is a question. So in the chorus, I'm not sure if I hear like a digital piano or something, but I hear like some chords in the chorus, and I'm wondering what they're from. So. Oh god, we passed the chorus. So you wanna play with magic? Is that a synthesizer? Is that in the chorus, when you hear the chords, I don't know the chord progression, but is that a synthesizer going out, buddy?
Okay, I'm listening. I think it's a big synth pad. Big low synth pad.
Okay, yeah, because if you listeners can listen, you can hear now. It's kind of hard to hear, but you'll be able to hear. Now that I think about it, it's not piano, but it, like, sounds like it's on the offbeat. So you wanna play with
magic. I like the production on this song.
Down.
Yeah, it's like a bass synth pad.
So it's a bass.
Not an electric bass, a synth.
But it's a bass. It's like a synth pad that sounds like a bass.
Yeah.
Not that anybody was interested in that. I just was curious. So.
Yeah, but it, to me, it sounds more like the cellos and basses in an orchestra, not an electric bass.
Yeah. Okay. But it's playing as.
Yeah.
And it's on the offbeats of the chord.
Mm-hmm.
Which is syncopation? No, not syncopation.
It's not on the offbeats, though. It's on the downbeats.
Or no, because it's like, maybe do you dare to do this down? Na, 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 down. I guess so. Maybe I'm hearing it wrong. Maybe this question was useless and stupid, and I'm wasting your time.
Yeah. Next question.
Okay. So, In 2013, when this was like a big hit, I'm guessing, and it was playing on the radio, was this like a little like different from some of the stuff that was like playing? Do you think this was kind of different because it kind of had like an infusion of rap and pop and like synth pop with some like, I guess, maybe some trap, like with the doom, doom.
I think it was very different for her.
Or what? Like, was it different for the industry? I know there's also this song that sounds like almost identical in the beginning called what's it called again? Oh, Joyful Noise.
Mm-hmm.
But like that was playing on the radio. Was this kind of different because it kind of infused all of that stuff together? Like when this came out, what was?
Yeah, well, let's
be
clear.
What do you think the world said?
Let's be clear. The Flame song wasn't really on the radio.
No.
I mean, unless you were listening to like a Christian rap station, which I don't know how many of those there are, but no, I thought the song really stood out because it was just a very different emotional territory for Katy Perry. Her stuff is always so like fun and uplifting, and this was really kind of like dark and mysterious and foreboding and
what's
cool.
That mean?
Foreboding, like hinting at more bad stuff happening, like you dropping my phone and unplugging it. Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right. So, but I wasn't tuned in enough to the pop zeitgeist in 2013 to tell you any more than that. Like, we'd have to go back and look at, like music press and how they covered the release of the song to see what the vibe was.
Hang on. Keep talking.
All right.
Okay, I don't know why I said that. I just thought I was going to, like, come up with something great to say, and I never did. That happens a lot on here.
So we were talking about the reception of the song.
Yeah, and, like, how people took it, how popular it was.
It was number one. Number one in the U.S., Canada, Netherlands. It had, you know, some pretty good reviews in the press, too. I mean, people got on her for using a lot of cliches in her lyrics, but they really liked the change in direction sonically.
Cool. So, yeah, I guess there probably was stuff out there like it, but I guess this was kind of unique because it had all that.
Yeah, felt like a change.
World in it. Or, yeah, at least unique for her as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, that is actually it for my questions today. I actually had 5 prepared, but I only asked 3 of them because, well, first of all, I don't want to make this a long episode that people have to listen to. And third of all, my other 2 questions are kind of backups because they're not the best questions. They're just, I don't think they'll be interesting for people. I can ask you, Dad, on our own time. But yeah, I hope this episode was interesting.
So we have to do one thing before we sign off, which is my favorite part of the song. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Now say, there's no going back.
There's no going back.
All right. Say it again.
There's no going back.
Okay. Love it. So what are we doing next? What are we doing next week?
Next week. Oh, wait, before I say that, I hope this episode wasn't boring for people. I hope this was actually interesting. I hope this becomes one of your newfound songs that you like. And yeah, tell us
what
you think about the lawsuit. Comment on our post or whatever.
And if the appeal goes through for some reason and you see a story about it, now you'll be really well informed about all the issues at stake.
Not like these people are paying attention to what's happening with Katy Perry, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for listening. We appreciate everybody who listens, even though we might not sound like it, but we do. And
next week?
Yeah, next week.
Next
week in 2 weeks, we are doing a double song episode, which might be a failure because our lightning round was a failure. But this is actually more of like a, well, so Ed Sheeran, we've never done a song with Ed Sheeran. Oh, we don't know him. But we never did a song on Ed Sheeran. So he kind of released two new singles recently for his new and upcoming album, I guess. I'm not a big Ed Sheeran fan, but his new songs aren't terrible. So we're doing his new two new singles, Bad Habits and Shivers.
I'm excited.
I am too.
Finally talk about Ed Sheeran.
Yes.
All right.
Who apparently one of our friends doesn't like.
Oh, really?
Jimmy Press.
Oh, yeah.
If you're listening.
You might be.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.